And we're back on In Focus News Radio KMAN, chatting here today with Riley County Historical Museum Executive Director Cheryl Collins and Board Member Jed Dunham, who's on the Board of Directors, about the 1918 pandemic flu that devastated a lot of folks. I'm not sure how many people total.
Well, even today, the numbers are still anywhere from 50 million to 100 million people. I like to go back and say that, you know, the 1918 pandemic killed more people in 12 weeks than the World War did in 4 years.
Hmm. So, CDC says 675,000 people, I think, in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah. Worldwide, lots
were
of
killed.
People.
So that's 675,000 Americans who died from influenza in 1918. Large number.
Yeah, and it still puzzles people to this day here, the entire spread of that. And we look at today with the coronavirus, and that's puzzling us now. We don't know how it started exactly and how it's morphed into what it is today.
Right. And it's a great topic to bring up today, because one of the timeline is key. I'm you know, anyone who knows me will know timeline. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, 100 years after the 1918 pandemic, there's still so many unanswered questions, which then, when something new happens, like here in 2020, 2019 with the coronavirus, rumor fills the gaps. Okay, so talking about China and the COVID-19 virus, the coronavirus disease 2019. Well, this came out, I heard about this in December of 2019, when it pops out of the meat market in Wuhan, China, and has all the inklings of a pandemic, kind of a new disease, you know, which is something to be, I wouldn't say alarmed, but certainly pay attention to.
Because you don't have the immunities to new diseases.
And it's new. We don't know, what does it do? How's it going to spread? Who's immune to it? All those unanswered questions. But once, you know, this new disease pops up, we always benchmark it against 1918. And we have this great fear, you know. And then so the understanding of 1918 influenza pandemic, even today, is we think it may have started in Kansas. It came in three waves. It did these, you know, there's just mystery behind it. And so that, again, feeds the rumors that we have today. You know, whereas, did it come out of a Chinese laboratory? Did it come in? No. Mm-hmm. But because we still have so many unanswered questions, that opens the door. So, again, going back to 1918, this team that we developed at Kansas State University was able to eliminate, you know, separate seasonal from pandemic in 1918, which kind of broke down this three-wave theory. And then we spoke specifically to pandemic. And then we started to isolate timeline. You know, how quickly does a disease spread? How devastating does it become? And how rapid does it unfold? And so going back into what is still generally accepted about 1918 today was that in 1918, when this pandemic hit, it erupted in three different places across the world in August. You know, Boston, Massachusetts, France, and Africa. And to me, as someone who didn't know anything about science, I said, well, that's asking science to do quite a pretty large task there. I don't think that's really how science works. And so as a historian then going back and say, well, let's go to these three individual spots, Boston, Africa, France, and let's see what happened in 1918 there. And so just speaking on Africa, we go back and it says, you know, on August 15th, this pandemic influenza erupts on the coastal port of Freetown, South Africa, Sierra Leone, and from there, the timeline is indisputable. It wipes out Africa. Well, what happened at the port that day? And so we find out, you know, that there's a ship that arrives from England. And God bless the Royal Navy for all their meticulous records, because we're able to go in and find this ship, the HMS Mantua, which was a British Royal freighter that plied between England, Africa, and Brazil during the course of the war. Just, you know, rotated. And this ship arrives in the port of Freetown, Sierra Leone, on August 14th, under strict quarantine. And so at 8 p.m., it's, you know, it drops anchor and it's under quarantine, but then the very next day it has to get recoaled. You know, they had to refuel the ship. And so they bring the coalers on board to, fill the ship back up. And then later that afternoon, ironically, an influenza pandemic erupts in the coaling, you know, mm-hmm. barracks out there. So things started to come together for us. And so we looked at this ship, and we were able to find the medical records on this ship and the meticulous sick call records, and traced it all the way back to England. And we see that, you know, that there's no one on the sick list when it leaves England on August 1st, but by the second, third, fourth day out to sea, people start to come down with influenza. and people start to die. And I'm saying, you know, well, this is pandemic, so we're stretching this timeline back. It didn't start in Africa. Maybe now we pushed it back to England. We look at, again, we look to Boston and this massive pandemic outbreak that began the United States timeline begins in Boston, Massachusetts, in the naval station there. Obviously, the U.S. Navy did not want to take credit for causing all these damage. So they did a meticulous insightful report in 1919 that said, well, we don't think it started here, but it might have started there. And they traced these two ships that arrived from Europe and arrived in New York City in the middle of August. So, well, what then? You know, that's a good clue. Let's go and find out what those two ships are about. And as we did, lo and behold, we find pandemic flu on both of those ships. Both of those ships left a port in Holland. And so now things are starting to come together. And so again, timeline. We're breaking down this three-wave theory. We're breaking down these three outbreak points in the middle to late August. And now we're taking it back to mainland Europe right around August 1st. And things become to get on. So we're pushing it back and piecing it together. And as we do so, we're developing this timeline. And we're seeing that when the pandemic erupts, it does the same thing, the same way, every single time. Strikes mass, high virulence, many people get sick, high mortality, many people die. And we start, creating our story on that. And it's just this is kind of where the story for me just gets fascinating, kind of like a Netflix special, because you start following these, the New York newspapers, the information of the day. Where do we get our information? Just like in 1918, there's this rumor of this Spanish influenza. And so it's in the news, but Spanish influenza was just this seasonal flu, and it kind of morphed into the pandemic there, but great mystery. And so there's great questions. And so when these two ships arrive in New York City and they're taking sick passengers off who are suffering from pandemic flu, which at the time wasn't recognized as such, and they're dying from pneumonia, secondary bacterial pneumonia. And so, well, obviously they died of pneumonia, so they didn't die of the flu, right? But we know now that those two were very much related. And so we push back these timelines. Just kind of let science do what science wants to do and keep pushing back that timeline and keep pushing back the origin points. And so we start, isolating it back to Europe, and I start to read these newspaper accounts from these reporters. And you just kind of get in tune with them over the course of the newspapers over a week or two. And this one gentleman has a contact in London who has a secret contact in Holland who starts feeding him information and saying, hey, there's something that's coming across that, great numbers of influenza are being reported in these cities of Liège and Namur and Mons and all across, behind the German lines. And these numbers are similar to Black Death and the Black Plague. And so our, ears perk up, tail starts wagging, we start going back to there. And the story continued to develop and unfold. And that's kind of where...
My goodness. Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. Well, what would you say is maybe some of the biggest lessons we learned from that here going forward?
I would say that science does what science wants to do. And science operates under its own timeline. And so what does that mean? Well, let's in the case of the COVID-19 virus in China, if this were this global pandemic fear that's going to kill the planet, like a Hollywood movie or so, well, we would see a timeline that would be far more interesting than what we're noticing right now. So it breaks out in Wuhan, China in December, city of 11 million people. If this is the same type of a pandemic strength that 1918 had, where there were no immunities, people just were susceptible to this, it would have infected the entire community. And you would have seen dramatic numbers of, and influenza pandemic death in 19 was, depending on the community, 5% mortality, which is 100 people get sick, 5 of them die. That's a pretty, it's a pretty strong number. With the COVID-19 virus, as all I've seen, the numbers that I've tracked, which again, you kind of have to take into account, how are they, how factual are they? But it seems that this has about a 2% mortality, which, the optimist that I am says, well, hey, if you do get sick, you got a 98% chance of getting better. That's not too bad. It's not something to be too afraid of. But I'm not seeing this unstoppable infectious rate. So the virulence of this COVID-19 virus, I'm curious. I don't know. But mm-hmm. to me, the two things that I look at are how many people are getting sick, who's getting sick, and who's dying. And I haven't seen the COVID-19 virus come anywhere close to what happened in 1918. And as Cheryl and I, as historians by nature here, looking back at to what happened in 1918, the world was thrown into complete disarray with the First World War. Yeah. There was every single element of human life had been disrupted. And so you had people who had lived their entire lives, generations, in places that had not been exposed to foreign disease and such. And so their immunity was wide open to these things. 100 years later, the human race has developed much stronger immunities to a lot of different things. And I'm, like I said, so I don't believe a 1918 pandemic, as devastating as it happened in 1918, could happen again with a natural type disease. I mean, it just doesn't. It seems that the human body has enough inherent strong immunity that we can survive things. But the other side, our world is not, you know, we don't have thousands and thousands of young men stacked into, you know, barracks and, you know, that don't know about a virus and don't know about washing hands and the measures that can be in place. So I think we're much better prepared.
Right. Medical advances.
Very much so.
In World War I, 30% of doctors were tied up in the war effort. Yep. So, I mean, there were a lot of factors in 1918. That doesn't mean that pandemics can't occur because
Absolutely. We've
had flu pandemics, 1957, 1968, and 2009. So there's always a risk of a pandemic, but it wasn't to the scale of 1918.
Exactly.
So that tells you, wash your hands, get your flu shot, get your pneumonia shot, do all
Trust
those
science.
Things. Yeah, do. Right, exactly. So, yeah.
Wow, this is all fascinating. I wish we had more time.
I do too. We could go on all day.
Yeah, we certainly could.
There's one thing, if I could just throw this in real quick, and Cheryl, and I don't know, Jed, if you're familiar with the name of Dr. Samuel Crumbine.
Oh, absolutely.
This was not the event that triggered the don't spit on the sidewalk bricks. That was a battle against tuberculosis.
Right.
Yeah.
But they coincided about the same time.
That public health, which again is a change since 1918.
Exactly.
Our public health system is much, much, much better.
Yeah. Oh.
Our health department here in Riley County has plans in case there is a pandemic. I mean, they have them ready. Mm-hmm. So in 1918, that was not the case.
Yeah, yeah. And Dr. Crumbine was really a trailblazer.
Absolutely.
When it came to public health.
Yes. Oh,
and the 1918 pandemic is known as the moment that science became modernized and medicine became modernized. And again, looking at history, you know, influenza, just like the COVID-19, is a virus. You know, a virus is an infectious agent that's very, very tall, much smaller than a germ. And in 1918, we didn't know what a virus was. So all these medical descriptions that are written in 1919, 1923, that still do not know the medical terminology for a virus, are writing it, you know, from what they saw with their own eyes. But then once in 1930, the virus becomes, you know, is known. It's almost as if we just discounted all the information that came before. And so we always need to be, you know, absorbing all the information that's there, because when we lack the information, that's when rumor fills the void.
Yeah. And it is interesting that Crumbine recognized that link in hygiene to disease.
There were standard drinking cups on railroads.
Well,
there were all kinds of towels that were shelled.
Swat the Fly was another of his initiatives.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
I did learn something, though, this morning about Crumbine. He was the model for Doc Adams on Gunsmoke.
Really?
The character by Milford
Stone. He was from Dodge City.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I had never made that connection, but I never knew that before. So
learn something new every day. Appreciate that.
That's exactly what's amazing to find out on the internet. You know, Abe Lincoln said that a couple of times.
And Kansas history has it all.
I mean, don't we know?
We have the best.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for enlightening us here on
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the time to be here. Great to see everybody.
All right. Stay tuned. More in Focus after this on K-Man.